presents The Day of the Triffids, a serial for broadcasting in six parts by Giles Cooper from the novel by John Wyndham. Episode 1, The End Begins.
Nearly. One or two things to dry.
I'll give you a hand.
Cloth coming over.
What's this thing?
A very special retort. Be careful. It took a long time to make.
Chemical glassware always looks as though you could make coffee in it.
I dare say you could if there was such a thing as coffee these days.
How are you getting on?
Not bad. We need more coal.
You had a ton the other day.
Oh, I want a lot more than that.
Darling, what are you going to do with it?
Boil up seawater for salt. Then make metallic sodium, then sodium cyanide, I hope.
Surely there's an easier way of getting salt.
The nearest mine's in Worcestershire.
And the nearest coal mine?
In Kent.
And how do you get there from the Isle of Wight in these hard times?
There's a tank landing craft lying off Cowes. She's quite sound, and Michael thinks he can get the engines running. I'm going to suggest to the committee that we load her up with a bulldozer and half a dozen trucks, run along the coast of Dover, and see if we can't bash our way through.
You may not get much of a welcome from the miners.
We'll take some flour and cloth to trade with them.
If there are any.
There were last month. Ivan was over there in the helicopter. They're fairly well organized and quite friendly. We might start a regular trade. Far better than raiding household stocks in Portsmouth.
You know, it's surprising that, how little there is in people's coal cellars.
It was May.
When it happened? Oh, yes. It's May now.
6 years ago.
Oh, come in.
Oh, good, Bill. I've caught you. And Josella.
Hello. Hello, Elspeth. We were just knocking on.
Oh, no, you're not. I've got this thing working, and you're going to use it.
What is it?
A deep brick corner. We've got a gear to the voltage of the generator at long last, and you're both going to talk to it.
Say what?
Everything. It's for the history.
Why me?
Because you were in on the disaster before it even happened. From the Triffid angle, at any rate.
Couldn't I just write it down?
No. Two reasons. One, you'll never do it, and two, the girl who will transcribe it is blind. As you very well know, seeing she's one of your wives.
Sheila?
Yes. Now, come on.
Well, surely there's no reason to start tonight.
I've got to take advantage of every minute the generator's on. Now, off you go.
Well, I... Lord, I don't know. It's difficult to think oneself back into the middle 50s. Well, half the things we've been talking about would mean nothing to someone living then.
Have a heart, Bill. We were living then.
Oh, you've got to be more than three.
Go on, Bill.
I was 9 when a man called Umberto Palangueth was shown into the office of the managing director of the Arctic and European Fish Oil Company. It wasn't the first time he had been there.
Ah, Mr. Palangueth, do sit down. I'm afraid I was in conference last time you came.
Yes.
We analyzed that sample of oil which you left for us.
Yes.
Very interesting.
I imagine that you might think so.
A vegetable oil, of course.
But with a far higher vitamin content than any of your fish oils.
Oh, yes, I agree. As a matter of fact, to be candid, we've never seen anything quite like it.
You will. It will be on the market in quantity in about 8 years from now.
Oh, yes?
Not if you can help it. Is that what you're thinking?
I wouldn't put it quite as crudely as
that. No. But I am a crude fellow, so I'll say it for you. Also, he will tell you that you haven't got a hope of stopping it. The experimental station where this sample was produced is a long way off, both in geography and in ideology.
What is your nationality, Mr. Palangueth?
South American and quite irrelevant. I am a citizen of the world, not without friends.
Hmm. I heard they were experimenting with sunflower seed oil, but it isn't that.
No, not sunflowers.
Some kind of nut?
No. I understand it is an entirely new species. Here is a picture of it.
Good Lord, what an incredible thing. It is a plant.
Oh, certainly.
It looks like a cross between a giraffe and a cairn terrier, covered in leaves.
It is a cross between a great many things, some of them not nice. But in a few years' time, it will be producing a far better oil than yours, at half your present price.
What are you offering, and how much do you want for it?
I offer you a tray of fertilized seeds 6 months from now, and I want £100,000.
Do you?
If you consider all the implications, you will find that I am being very reasonable.
I shall have to consult my fellow directors.
Naturally. I would like an advance of £25,000.
That's rather high.
Not really. You see, I shall have to buy myself a jet aircraft, and it had better be a good one.
But not good enough. He landed by night on a flat Siberian waste. A man ran up to the plane with a box under his arm and got in. Parangeth took off at once and climbed steeply. Somewhere high over the Pacific, they caught up with him and quite justifiably blew the plane to pieces. After the fragments had dropped away and the pursuers had followed them down to sea level, there was nothing left but a trail of white vapor. Only it wasn't vapor. It was a cloud of seeds, so gossamer-like that they even floated on that thin air until they drifted down into the winds of the world.
Good. Keep it going, Bill. How much of that is speculation?
Not much. A gentleman called Fedor turned up a couple of years later and said he'd help to organize it, laid out landing lights and so on. He'd heard the planes in pursuit of Palanget. Besides, there's no other way to account for the fact that Triffid suddenly appeared in half a dozen different parts of the world at once. We even had one in our back garden. I was 15 at the time.
Dad! Do you know there's a mystery behind the compost heap?
Go on with you. Pull the other one.
No, really? It's a peculiar plant. Do come and look. Between the berberies and the fence. There.
My word, yes, Billy, you're right. It's very odd indeed.
I can't find it in any of the books. Not flowers of the field or anything.
It looks kind of foreign.
There's a sort of coiled thing, like a fern shoot in that trumpet-shaped thing at the top of the stem. Look. And a lot of dead flies floating about inside.
It's no beauty, whatever it is. We'll dig it up next time we're having a bonfire.
Oh, no, Dad. Please not.
What do you want to do with it?
Oh, study it. You know, take its measurements and keep a record of its growth.
Oh, all right, then. But I wish you'd spend as much time on arithmetic as you do on nature study.
Oh, Dad, it's not nature study. I was standing beside it yesterday when the four little twigs at the base of the stem began to vibrate against it. They made a sort of pattering sound. This is new. I've applied for a job I saw in the paper. It's to be a trainee with the Arctic and European Oil Company Limited. I think it's palm oil and whales and groundnuts. It might be interesting, but I don't expect I shall get it.
Do sit down, Mr.
Mason. William Mason, sir.
Ah, yes. My name's Lucknor. I'm in charge of research. Now, tell me something about yourself.
What sort of thing, sir?
Oh, what you like doing, why you want to join Arctic European. Just talk to me.
Well, sir, I'm interested in plants and animals and things that live.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like figures much, or sitting at a desk.
Hmm. Now, what experience have you?
Biology at school. It was my best subject. And I've done some research on my own.
On what?
Well, there's a plant in our garden that nobody knows about. And I've kept a sort of record of it.
What does it look like?
It has a circular bowl covered with leaves, which at present is 210.5 centimeters in circumference. From it springs a stem which is 82 centimeters in circumference and 120 centimeters in height from the bowl. The whole plant standing 210 centimeters from the ground.
Yes, that's very thorough. Now tell me what it looks like.
Oh, like a kind of shaggy, leafy giraffe with no legs.
What?
And a leafy calyx where the head would be. I'm sorry, it's not a very good description.
Oh, yes, it is. Has it got four twiglets growing straight up from the base of the stem?
Yes.
And inside the calyx a coiled thing which might be a stamen?
Yes, that's it.
Indeed it is. Get me the chairman, would you? How long has it been there?
6 months since I noticed it. Oh, but it was well established then.
Are you... Walter Lucknor, sir. I have a young man sitting in front of me who's been growing a triffid in his back garden. Yes, sir, I will.
We're going up to see him. He'll be free in a moment.
A Triffid? Is that what it's called?
Yes, and in 2 years' time, it will be the reason for this company's existence.
But what does it do?
Produces an oil that wipes the floor with any of our prison products. Some seeds were accidentally dispersed a year or two ago, and we've just had reports that specimens have been found in the tropics. I'm going out to Ecuador next week to bring some home. Yours is the first reported in a temperate country.
Oh, but why Triffid? Surely that means three-pronged.
Yours hasn't walked yet, I take it.
Walked?
Obviously not. But when it's between 18 months and 2 years old, it will lift its three main roots from the ground and walk on them. Hence, Triffid.
But no plants walk, sir.
They do now. And by the way, you've got the job.
But I very nearly lost it. I went home hopping with excitement, and the first thing I did was to go into the garden and take a look at my Triffid. I bent down and examined the roots. For the first time, I noticed that there were indeed three of them. I began to scrape the earth away from them with a vague idea that the thing might walk sooner. I was conscious of a slight movement above me, and then something cracked across my face like a whip. I woke up in bed with a puzzled-looking doctor standing over me. I was the first person in England to be stung by a Triffid.
Yes, and how did you survive it?
Simply because it wasn't fully grown. By the time I'd recovered, Walter was back from Ecuador with a dozen mature specimens, and he'd already discovered that the sting would kill a man instantly. He'd also discovered that if you cut the sting off, the Triffid was harmless. Well, I went down to Worthing with him, and we set up the first Triffid nursery together. You know what happened in the next few years. The wretched things were so successful as oil producers that we reared more and more of them until... Well, here we are today.
Yes, good. Now, can't you give me something more personal, Bill? I mean, you worked with them more than anyone.
Except Walter. He really understood Triffids.
Go on, Bill.
I remember once sitting on a bank looking at a field of tethered Triffids one evening, just about sunset. What a row they're making.
Yes. They're talkative tonight, aren't they?
I wonder if it's the weather. They seem to do it more when it's dry.
Do you talk more when it's dry?
Talk?
Yes, do you?
Well, you don't really think that's what they're doing.
Well, why not?
Well, it's absurd. Plants talking to each other.
You once said they couldn't walk.
Yes, but that's a mechanical thing. If they talked, it would mean they had some intelligence.
Haven't you ever noticed that when they sting, they seem to go for the face of the hands?
Yes.
And especially for the eyes.
Well, that's probably accidental.
Possibly. But it could be because they want to reduce our advantage. Sight is our only advantage, you know.
What, over those vegetables?
Yes. Now, you just think. If you were blind and alone in a field with a Triffid, what could you do? For a start, you'd starve to death. But the Triffid wouldn't. It could exist on flies until it found you. Then it would only have to root itself beside your body and wait.
Oh, that's a nice thought.
And here's another one. In some parts of Africa, they've been known to surround villages at night and kill the inhabitants.
But we've never found anything like a brain. They're the same as any other plant when you dissect them.
All the same, if there was some catastrophe which made us weaker, it would automatically make them stronger. Especially now we've stopped docking them to improve their quality.
Well, I don't see what catastrophe.
Probably none. But the scientists have been playing with some pretty odd things lately. Look at all these artificial satellites. Nobody knows what's in them or how many there are, or how controllable they may be.
But do you really think there's anything to worry about?
I don't know. Anyhow, it's no use worrying. While there's money in Triffids, there'll be Triffids. We'll tap this lot tomorrow. Have my mask and gloves ready, will you?
I've often wondered what happened to Walter. He'd have been useful to us now. It was a year afterwards that he saved my eyesight and my life. We were examining some specimens when one of them smacked out at me with its sting, and a few drops of poison came through the meshes of the mask and went into my eyes. He got me back to the lab at once and gave me the antidote, but I had to go into hospital for a week or two. They sent me to St. Mary's, right in the middle of London. I'd been there 10 days when the night of the green flashes took place. You probably remember how reports came in over the air all day long from places which were already having their night, telling of a fantastic display of lights in the upper atmosphere, and by evening, everyone who could get to a window or climb on a roof was gazing up, hoping for a free firework display. As soon as darkness fell, I could hear the ahs and oohs, not only from the hospital staff, but from the whole city outside. I began to feel that a gigantic party was being given to which only I had not been invited. Do shut the window, nurse.
Oh, but it's marvelous, Mr. Mason. Really, it is. They say it's a comet, you know. Green and white flashes all over the sky.
And bright red buses clashing their gears all down the street. I know. Surely you can see just as well with it shut.
Oh, aren't we just in a bad mood tonight? Oh, of course. It's a shame, really, you having your eyes still bandaged. Still, it's not for long now.
What time tomorrow will they do the unbandaging?
Sister said 11:30, but Mr. Palmer may be a bit late.
Oh! Well, what's happened?
Oh, that was a bright one. It lit up the whole room. You can see everybody standing on the rooftops watching. Oh, there's another. It's quite dazzling. Oh, what a pity you couldn't see it.
Yes, isn't it? Now, do go away. There's a good girl.
Have you everything you want?
Yes, I think so. Is the radio there where it should be? Yes.
Then I'll leave you
and
for
some
now.
Some music.
I look in later to see you're settled down. Good night.
Good night.
Oh, and there's another tremendous flash right across the whole sky.
No.
I expect you can hear the crowd. They're like children at a firework display. From where I'm standing on the top of Primrose Hill, I can see hundreds of faces all turned upwards to watch this astonishing spectacle which began over the Pacific 12 hours ago and by now must have been seen by 90% of the world's population. It's believed that the Earth is passing through a belt of meteoric debris caused by the passing of a comet, and I really do urge anyone who possibly can to watch it. The whole sky is pulsating with vivid streaks and flashes of light, and the whole of London, right across to the Surrey Hills, stands out brilliantly in the hard green glare. All the usual features of a London crowd are present, from the man with a sandwich board announcing the end of the world to the man you can probably hear not far away from me. Yes, he's doing quite a good trade too. Some of the brighter flashes really make you blink. Oh, there's a splendid one right across.
Oh, shut up and let me get some sleep. Six. Seven. Eight. Oh, it must be so. It is eight. What a damn disorganized hospital. Where's that bell? Well, come on! Nurse! Sister! Hey, come here! Incompetent fools leaving me like this, betting there was a fire. Nurse! Nurse! Who's that? Is someone there?
Whose room's this?
Mine. Aren't you the house surgeon?
Yes. Mr. Mason.
Oh, can't you see?
No.
What?
I'm blind. I woke up blind. I've been trying to find someone to help me.
I'm afraid I'm in the same state unless you care to help me off with these bandages.
Where are you?
Here. That's the end of the bed. Now, look, work your way up. It's my hand. We must look a comic couple.
I'm not laughing.
I won't be if the treatment hasn't worked. There's a pin at the back I can't quite manipulate.
All that?
Thanks. It's like unwinding a maple.
Oh, you better do it yourself. Are the curtains drawn?
I suppose so. Nobody's coming to undraw them. The whole staff must have a hangover or something after last night.
I can see.
Clearly?
Perfectly. The curtains are green. I always thought they were blue. I don't know why. Well, it's lucky my clothes are here. Oh, you don't know what it's like being able to see again.
I can imagine.
Oh, yes, of course. I'm sorry. How can I help you?
Take me along the passage to Lister Ward. There's a telephone in the sister's room.
Oh, this way. Oh, hold my arm. All right?
Yes?
Place sounds like a madhouse.
There must be someone on duty somewhere.
Is the ward at the end of the passage?
There are swing doors. Sister's room is on the right before you get there.
Hey, you!
Now, wait a moment. There's someone in the ward calling out. We'd better see what they want. It's all dark. Anything wrong?
There'll be water, no breakfast,
nothing.
I pull the curtains back, mate.
All right. Wait here, Doctor. We can't leave them in the dark.
No, of course not.
There.
Oh, go on.
What?
Don't muck about, mate. Pull the curtains proper. We can't see a thing.
Yeah, go on, pull them.
But I have.
He's blind too, like me. We're all blind.
Oh!
Quick, let's get out of here.
This looks like the room.
Give me the telephone.
On the table. There.
Dead. I thought it would be.
What's happened? What is it?
Everyone's blind. Finished.
There must be something we can do.
Yes. This is the fifth floor, isn't it?
Yes.
Where's the window?
You're facing it.
Thank you.
No. Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Where's anyone? Come on.
The stairs! Who's there? Don't move if you're on the stairs and can't see.
He knocked me over. I couldn't see him coming. Is that Mr. Mason?
Yes. I took the bandages off. I can see. Are you hurt?
Bruised a bit, that's all. I was washing the diabetic in number 7. And I suddenly couldn't see. And he couldn't either. Then I went for help. But there's nobody.
All right, all right. Don't worry. Let's get out of this place. Which is the best way?
Straight down these stairs and through the main hall. What about the man who fell?
I'm afraid he's dead.
Oh, no.
Hold on now. Now, there are 4 steps coming. 1, 2, here's a landing. Turn right. What's that?
The children's ward. Oh, we must go to them.
There's nothing we can do at the moment. Look, 4 more steps. Turn right.
Where?
Here's the main hall. Cross here. Stop now. Here's the door. Out forward.
No, I'd rather stay here. I don't want to go out.
This place is a nightmare.
What place isn't like this? Besides, I know my way around here. Blindfold.
There'll be no food, nothing.
I feel safer here. Besides, there are the children.
What can you do for them?
Make them a little less frightened. I am a nurse, after all.
You want me to stay?
No. You must go out and do what you can. Goodbye.
The street was empty and horribly silent. There seemed no particular reason to go in any direction, but after a moment's pause, I set off towards the West End. skirting a fruit lorry which had run across the pavement and deposited its load of oranges in the gutter. I badly wanted a drink. I crossed the road to a pub called the Alamein Arms. The door was open and a lugubrious song came from the interior.
Don't bury me at all. Yes.
Oh, that's gin. What's this one? Port. She blazes with port.
Hi.
Who's that?
Are you open?
Just broken the window, haven't I? Of course I'm open.
I need a drink.
Who are you, anyway?
From the hospital.
Can you see?
Yes.
Is this whiskey I've got here?
No, peppermint.
Jump blazes with peppermint. Farm me a bottle of whiskey, Doc.
Okay, I'm doctor enough for that, anyhow. This one's whiskey.
Thanks. Help yourself.
I'll have a brandy, if I may.
Anything you like.
You get drunk if you take it down like that.
I am drunk. And I've got to get drunker. You know what? I'm blind. That's what I am. I'm blind as a bat. Everybody's blind as a bat except you. It's that ruddy comet. Green shooting stars. Now everyone's blind. Do you see green shooting stars?
No.
There you are, then. Proves it. You didn't see them. You are blind. Everyone else saw them. All blind as bats.
Are you sure it's everyone?
Listen. You can't hear yourself talk here most days, not with the door open.
I see what you mean.
It's obvious, really.
Are you the landlord?
What if I am?
I want to pay.
Yeah, forget it. You know why? Because money's no use to a dead man. That's what I am after a few more drinks.
You look all right.
What's the good of living blind as a bat? That's what my wife said. She was right. And she more guts than what I have. When she found out the kids were blind too, she took them into her bed with her and turned on the gas.
Oh, my
God. What she did. I hadn't the guts to stick with them. But I will have soon. I'm going back up there soon when I'm drunk enough.
No.
Why not? Give me one reason why not. You can't.
It's wrong.
No. Nothing's left to be wrong. If you can't see that, you're blinder than me. Drunk enough to do it now. Here I come, girls. Here I come.
I didn't stop him or try to follow him. I watched him go. Then I knocked back the last of my brandy and went out into the silent street.
That was episode one of The Day of the Triffids, a serial for broadcasting in six episodes by Giles Cooper from the novel by John Wyndham, with Patrick Barr as Bill Mason. Production for the BBC is by Peter Watts.